All right, so this is our third and final of our mini series as we focus on the core of the Haggadah, the passage of Aram Yovi Ravi, which hopefully we're getting a sense of. You know, the Rambam says that ideally one should extensively analyze this passage. The fact that we're going to spend 3 hours over 3 weeks discussing it and yet leaving so much more on the table just gives a sense of how much one can do. You know, if you think about trying to do that after Nirtza, at 12, 1, 2 in the morning, how long it could go. Not really sure, especially before coffee was invented. But this week is going to be the last of our three. And if we said that Arami Ovi Ravi really is the core of the Haggadah, the core of the mitzvah of considering and thinking and analyzing and understanding what Yetzias Mitzrayim is all about, then the pasuk we're going to discuss this week is the core of the core. So remember, we said that Aram Yovi Ravi has four psukim, which condense the whole story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And hopefully people have a Haggadah. If not, it's okay. And the first pasuk was describing our original descent to Mitzrayim. The second pasuk, as I myself get a Haggadah, the second pasuk was describing our enslavement. The third pasuk, which we talked about last week, surprising, the one which really one would we would not take for granted, or would not take for granted, is the pasuk of Vanitzak, where the Torah describes how we cried out to Hashem and Hashem heard our tefillos, and we saw in depth the different levels of suffering that that Hashem saw, as opposed to everything else in the Haggadah, which is extensive in Sefer Shemos. That piece of Hashem answering our tefillos, if we just had the story of Sefer Shemos, we really would have thought it was a pretty minimal piece. It's only a couple of psukim. But in Chumash Devar makes clear for us it's a very big deal. And now finally, this week is the payoff, where Hashem is going to take us out of Mitzrayim, Vayotziyanu Hashem in Mitzrayim. Hashem finally takes us out of Egypt. And we can see that this is the core in a couple of ways from the very beginning of the pasuk. So the Haggadah tells us, Yotziyanu Hashem Mitzrayim. That's the passage. Hashem took us out of Egypt with a strong hand, and we say an outstretched arm. Mora gadol. We'll have to translate that more accurately in a second, but for now we'll say means a tremendous awe. The osos with signs, and with mofsim, which also are normally translated as signs. So Hashem took us out of Egypt with five things: the strong hand, the outstretched arm, the awe, the signs, and the song. It's very surprising what is in this pasuk, if we think about it. And it's even more surprising, maybe, what is not in this pasuk. If I somehow had to write a book report saying, you know, Hashem took us out of Egypt in one sentence, what did Hashem take us out of Egypt doing or performing that we should remember? I would have thought for sure the Makos should have been involved. At least Makas Bechoros should have been mentioned. Maybe the pasuk would want to mention that not only did Hashem destroy the firstborn, but that Hashem destroys all of the Egyptian gods. Maybe we would not want to have a reference to chametz, a reference to matzah, a reference to Karban Pesach, a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. None of that is in the one pasuk that we get about Hashem actually taking us out of Egypt. No reference, no, at least no clear reference, no black on white, no explicit reference to Makos, to matzah, to Moshe Rabbeinu, to any of the miracles. Nothing is there, nothing in specific. Maybe as surprising as what isn't there is what is. What does this even mean? A strong hand and an outstretched arm. Aren't those redundant? Don't those mean the exact same thing? So again, like the methodological theme that we've been seeing that Chazal really zero in on in the mitzvah of being doresh, of analyzing and expounding upon these psukim, is to see what isn't there is surprising. And the redundancy and the fact that there is redundancy makes it even all the more surprising. How could you go on and on and on with Yad Chazaka and Zra Nutiya, which mean the same thing, with Osos and Bovsim, signs and signs, which mean the same thing, while you are leaving out the Makos, leaving out Moshe, and leaving out the parts of the story that, you know, all the kids learned about in nursery school and in kindergarten? If we stop and think, the way the pasuk is written is very strange, as Chazal loved to say, Omer Darshini, it demands analysis, and that's exactly what we are going to do. So, what is the first drasha in the Haggadah? So, it's on those first three words, right? But Yotzianu Hashem, Yotzianu Hashem took us out, and then what does the Haggadah say? Lo al yidei malach, v'lo al yidei sarah, v'lo al yidei shaliach, not through an angel or an angel or a messenger, ala kadosh baruch hu b'chvodo v'atzmo. Hashem himself is the one who took us out. Now, the first thing to appreciate is where exactly does this drasha come from? How do we know from the pasuk, v'yotziinu Hashem mimitzrayim b'yad chazaka, etc., that Hashem was the one who took us out? And we talk about this all the time in the Haggadah, but it's not like the pasuk says black on white, Hashem took us out by himself. Chazal are darshaning the fact that the Haggadah, that the pasuk said, v'yotziinu Hashem mimitzrayim, right? Yudke vavke. That means it seriously. That means it was literally done by Yudke vavke, by Hashem himself, without any intermediary. Now, this idea that the Yetzias Mitzrayim was done by Hashem directly is, for Chazal, the core beating heart at the very, very center of the experience of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And this is what is building up to Matan Torah 50 days later, where all of Klal Yisrael gets a revelation, not from a malach, not from any intermediary, but from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. The ultimate goal, the ultimate dream, is for us to have that direct face-to-face relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva that we all have the potential to be, the bad news, as wicked as Yeravam ben Nevat, but the good news, we all have the potential to be as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. And that, in a sense, is what is coming out over here. That we all have a Yosein Hashem Yudke Vavke Mimitzrayim. You can see that this is what Chazal think is the most important part of the Haggadah from the very next line in the Haggadah. Because the entire time that we've been studying this, we have been darshaning and expounding upon one passage in Sefer Dvarim, Parashas Kisavo, the whole passage of the Bikurim, the Arami Yovidavi. And with singular focus, with really astonishing discipline, Chazal have not gone, you know, we open a page of Gemara. How long does it take for us to get to a tangent? 5 lines, 10 lines. And there's so much. You're in the sea of the world of Torah Sheval Peh. There is just so much before you. The Haggadah stays laser-like, focused on, we're going to analyze this phrase, Arami Yovidavi. We're going to analyze the next phrase, V'yered Mitzrayim, Anos Alpi Hadibur. Phrase by phrase, we have been totally and exclusively looking at the words of those few psukim and Sefer Devarim. And now, all of a sudden here, we have the one single exception in the entire Haggadah. When Chazal finally break out of the straitjacket of the psukim in Sefer Devarim to finally analyze and doresh a pasuk from Sefer Shemos. Because what does the Haggadah say? How do we know? They don't just settle for the drasha that the Yosin Hashem Yitzrayim, not through a malach or a sarf or a shliach, but a kadosh baruch hu batzmo. What the Haggadah continues? Shneamar, v'avarti v'aret Mitzrayim b'layla hazeh v'yikisi kol b'chor v'aret Mitzrayim v'dan v'avima v'chol lehem Mitzrayim v'aseh shvatim ani Hashem. Pasuk, we read this 2 weeks ago, Parshas Achodesh and Parshas Bo, right before the commandment to have the Karban Pesach and the commandment of the Matzah, and right before the Makas Bechoros, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, I am going to go. V'avarti, I will pass through Egypt, and I am going to destroy their firstborn, and I am going to destroy their gods. Now along come the Haggadah, and it makes a drasha on this Pasuk in Devarim. So now we have temporarily, if we had like an outline, we've branched off for the first and only time when we want to expound and deepen the idea that it was Hashem himself who took us out of Mitzrayim. We are not going to settle just for the pasuk in Devarim, the Yotzienu Hashem in Mitzrayim. Rather, the Haggadah has to continue. It's something very, very, very important that sometimes we can overlook and take for granted. We say, V'avarti be'eretz Mitzrayim, it was me who did it, or is going to do it. Aniv l'malach, me and not an angel. V'kc kol b'chor, I am going to slay the firstborn. Aniv l'osaraf, me and not a different kind of angel. The Rishonim discuss what exactly is the difference between a malach and a saraf. Different kinds of angels out there. It's above my pay grade, to be honest. But take a look at the Torah's Chaim Haggadah. There are angels which are permanent angels and angels which are temporary angels. But this is, again, way beyond me. But that's the meaning of the malach and the saraf. U'chol elokei elohei Mitzrayim, all the gods of Egypt. E'eseh shifatim. I will perpetrate judgment, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Ani velo, and if you have a Haggadah open in front of you, I think most of the Haggadahs have what I have here. Ani velo ha-shaliyah. Me and not the messenger. We'll come back to that in 1 second. Ani Hashem, ani hu velo acher. Me and nobody else. So with all of their focus on Devarim, finally here Chazal like let it rip. And we're going to like lovingly expound on this other pasuk in Shemos, the idea of Ani hu velo achir, the Yosinu Hashem, Kadosh Baruch Hu v'chvodo v'atzmo, it was him and him alone is at the core of the Haggadah. This is why the classic idea, Moshe Rabbeinu does not appear. It is so important for us to absorb the message that it was Hashem who took us out by himself, not through any other intermediary, that we even feel the need to drop Moshe Rabbeinu from the Haggadah itself. The focus has to be on Hashem. Especially in light of what happens to Bnei Yisrael a few weeks later, or months later, with the golden calf, where the way the Ramban explains it, Bnei Yisrael looked for that intermediary. They thought of Moshe Rabbeinu as not just a human being, but the semi-angelic figure who was responsible as the intermediary between them and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he's lost, and then they need something else. And that quickly devolves into the scene of the Egel Hazav. The Rambam says this is exactly how the origin of idolatry came to be. People who began worshiping the Malachim or worshiping the sun and the moon and the stars as Hashem's agents. And that quickly slides into something else. And Yadus, we dive into Hashem. Our relationship is with HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. There's actually a deal halacha. We learned this in the Kollel, I don't remember if it was this year or last year, but that a shul is supposed to have a little entranceway, a little hallway before you go into the sanctuary. You shouldn't open the door straight from the street and burst straight into shul. There should be a little room before. Why is that? So one of the Mefarshim explains, because you can imagine it's like if you had a waiting room before you go in to see the person. So we kind of construct a waiting room before we walk into shul. But why is that waiting room there? Because all the regular customers or patients, they walk into the office, they sit in the waiting room, they wait for the receptionist to finally call their name and allow them in to see the doctor. But we, Am Yisrael, we are the VIPs. We specifically construct a shul which has an entranceway, which has a room in the beginning, for us to blow right through it. We dafka don't need to wait in the waiting room. We go straight through. We have a direct address to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. The receptionist, you can imagine the Malach is there. He's taking names. He's taking registration. He's calling out saying, wait, who are you? What are you doing here? You can't go straight and see the king. And we say, excuse me, with all due respect, we are Bnei Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. We are Bnei Yisrael. And our address is HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Ani velo shliach, me and not anybody else. It is Hashem and Bnei Yisrael. That is the relationship which is the focus of the night of the Seder. Now, some of the Mefarshim point out, who is this HaShaliach? Me and not the agent. So we said there are different types of Malachim, the Malach, the Sarah. Who is HaShaliach? So some of the Rishonim say that this is a particular Malach. The details not for now, but other Rishonim say, no, who is the messenger? Who is Hashem's messenger in the context of Yetzias Mitzrayim? The shliach, the messenger, is Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a oblique way of the another hint of the Haggadah telling us, don't think about Moshe tonight. We love Moshe, and 353 days a year, we talk about Moshe Rabbeinu all the time. The night, even the day of Pesach, but the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, ani v'lo hashliach. We love Moshe Rabbeinu. We're going to talk more about him in a few minutes, but it is me and not him. Some of the Achronim even point out, I saw this from Rav Pinchas of Polotsk, but I think it was quoted from others as well. If you take the Rashi Tevos of Ani Velo Malach, with a Mem, Ani Velo Saraf, the Sin, Rashin, Ani Velo Ha Shaliach, me and not the messenger, so you get the Mem, the Sin, Shin, and the Hey. So one way of putting the whole pasuk together is the Haggadah is once again hinting to us that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who we should be focusing on and not Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, we can understand, by the way, why the Haggadah would not like say that black on white. It's a very delicate balance we need to walk. On the one hand, Chas v'Shalom, we don't want to diss. We don't want to explicitly minimize the role of Moshe Rabbeinu. Without him, where would we even be? But at the same time, we need to emphasize that it was Hashem himself. So, you know, there's a good message over here. We don't focus on the negative advertising. We don't focus on explicitly minimizing the role of Moshe Rabbeinu. We focus on the positive. We focus on, if you just say it was Hashem, 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 Hashem exclusively, you can understand what Chazal are trying to infer. And in case we couldn't figure it out from the inferral, some of the Mefarshim are pointing out there are even hints being dropped here about the messenger, about Malach Sarav Hashaliach, the Rashi Tevos. We should be thinking totally about a Kadosh Baruch. Okay, so that is definitely the absolute core message of the Haggadah. Now, as we proceed, we need to understand that total redundancy, right? Those five things, Yad Chazaka and Zra Netuya, strong hand and outstretched arm. What are those? Aren't they the same thing? Usos and Bofsim, aren't those the same thing? Signs and more signs. What is going on? So let's see what we can come up with. So the Haggadah says about Yad Chazaka, and as we've seen so many other times so far in this Limba, the Haggadah gives us an answer, but the answer in many ways raises more questions than it answers, which I'm sure is exactly what Chazal are after, because the whole name of the game for the night of the Seder is for us to be asking questions and thinking and discussing. But the Haggadah says, what is the Yad Chazaka? What is the strong hand? Dever, plague. Okay, and then it quotes the pasuk, Hine Yad Hashem ha'yo b'miknacha. Hashem's hand is going to be on your cattle. So the idea that a Yad Chazaka, a hand, can refer to dever, can refer to plague, is explicit in the pasuk in Va'era. That's what Moshe says to Paro. The hand of Hashem. There are 10 Malkos, as we know, and only one of them is referred to by Moshe to Paro as the hand of God. That is the plague of Dever. So Chazal understand from here that the Yad Chazaka that we are referring to is Dever, is plague. Okay, now one of the introductory questions we had when we set up the shiur tonight is why didn't the Pasuk mention any of the Malkos explicitly? So Chazal, if this means the fifth Maka, are starting to fill this in. I'm starting to say, no, actually, Dever is there. But we need to ask, you know, if I had to choose one of the Makos to be the first one off the bench, the first draft pick of the 10 Makos, no offense to Dever, it would not have been my first choice. You want to say Makas Bechoros because it's the climax? I could understand that. You want to say Dam because it's the first of the Makos? Can understand that too. Even you want to say maybe Barad Hail because that's when Paro finally says I've sinned. We can make a Dvar Torah about that. If someone wanted to say I don't know Kinim because that's the point lice when the magicians say to Paro that this is Etzba Elokim, this is the finger of God. Okay, I can understand that. Dever just seems totally random. Why is Dever the one of all the plagues, which is the one which is being highlighted over here? So some of the Rishonim, one possibility, is to deny that we are singling out Dever at all. And there's a Medrash which states that actually every single one of the Makos included plague. There was plague which came along with every single of the Makos. So that's what the Haggadah is flagging over here. Now, if that's true, though, it doesn't really relate to the proof Pasuk. I mean, the proof Pasuk was talking about the Makah of Dever itself, so it's a little bit difficult. But there are a couple of proposals I saw that I was really excited to share about why we would highlight Dever in particular. The first is from Rav Soloveitchik. I think this is quoted in the Siach HaGrid Haggadah. It is definitely, I think, also the Rabbi Ganak Haggadah. And the Rav points out that Dever is different from the previous four Makos in that this is the first one which executes permanent loss for Mitzrayim. The blood and the frogs and the lice and the animals were scary, irritating, annoying, but they didn't lose anything permanently. Barad, their crops will be wiped out. Arbad, their crops will be wiped out. Bechoros, they are going to die. The first permanent loss that they suffer comes from Dever, when all of their, at least of their cattle and livestock is killed. Writes of Soloveitchik, from now on, the Egyptians realize they are not the masters of their property. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the master of their property. Right? That is the Yad Chazaka, the mighty hand of Hashem. Until now, it's just been a question of pain, a question of endurance and tolerance, and that the Egyptians can handle. The new message here at Dever, he suggests, the reason why this is the Yad Chazaka, is because now Hashem has demonstrated, I am the master, you are not. And there's something interesting and ironic over here. What is the hallmark of being a slave? the defining element of slavery is that you are not in charge. A slave doesn't own any property. The property of the slave is the property of his master. And until this point, the Egyptians have been walking around thinking that they were the masters and we were the slaves. Along comes Dever, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally tells the Mitzrim, Vinahafahu, you think that you're the masters? You think that you have the property? You have the sheep and the cattle and the goats and everything? You're not the masters. You don't own a thing. You have no control over everything. The very fate of your property that you think is under your control is actually under the control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is one possible suggestion for why we would flag the Dever and associate that in particular with the Yad Chazaka. And there's another suggestion, which I absolutely love. And in order to get to depth of this, we need to see the next line in the Haggadah as well. Because the next line tells us about the Zroa Netuya, the outstretched arm. And what is the outstretched arm? So the Haggadah says, Zo HaCherev, this is the sword. How do we know that? Because the Pasuk in Divrei HaYamim, the Charbo Shlufa B'Yadon Netuya Al Yerushalayim. This is actually also in the context of plague, it happens to be, when David makes a big mistake and is counting, he counts up in Esau, does an illegal census, so there's a plague, a Malach shows up, thousands of Jews are being killed, and then finally the Malach pauses with his sword hand outstretched towards Yerushalayim. So since we said Yado Nituya, his hand was outstretched with a sword, that is the drasha, the outstretched arm is a sword. Okay. Problem is, there does not seem to be any sword in the whole episode of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Once again, Rishonim have various suggestions for what this is. The Ritva, for example, thinks that this just means it's a catch-all. It's a general reference to Hashem's revenge. We wanted to know why none of the Makos appeared in the Pasuk and Devarim. And actually, it all gets folded into the Cherev, the destruction, the sword, the revenge of Hashem. That's the suggestion of the Ritva. But already many of the Rishonim, the Ravan, the Abarbanel, say, if I had to choose one plague to be the plague of sword, of death, of killing, what am I going to choose? This is a reference to Makas Bechoros. We wanted to know, where is Makas Bechoros? It's here. This is the Zroa Netuya, the outstretched arm. Makas Bechoros. Okay. Along comes the Haggadah of the Maisa Nisa, the Haggadah of the Nasibas, which we've already quoted a few times before in this whole series. This Haggadah is amazing. And he says, well, why is the Haggadah highlighting Dever and Makas Bechoros of all? So he says, well, Dever is the fifth, obviously, and Makas Bechoros is the tenth. If you look carefully at the Pesukim in Sefer Shmos, Paro loses his free choice. You know, by the end, Paro no longer has the choice to do what he wants. Hashem hardens Paro's heart. But already the Ramban earlier point out that Paro had many chances to change his mind. When does Paro lose his free will? He loses his free will after the plague of Dever, after the fifth plague. Hashem basically says this black on white. There's one pasuk, I think it's in Parshas Bo, where Hashem says, I could have killed you all when there was Dever. When there was plague, I could have killed not only the Egyptian animals, but I could have killed the Egyptians. But I kept you alive to show my mighty wonders. The next five makos, right? See, the first five, the Yad Chazaka, the hand, those are the five where Paro had the chance to do tshuva. Then you upgrade. The next five, you go from the Yad to the Zroa, the arm. The arm is stronger than the Yad. And Maisa Nisa does not make this point. But if you look at the Makos themselves, you can draw a strong connection between each of the sets of five Makos. The plague of Dam and then the plague of boils. Boils is basically an intensified version of blood, right? Basically, the water was turning to blood. And then the next time around, like Maka A and then Maka A1, the Egyptian's skin is turning to blood. Tzfardeya is coming out of the water. And then you have the hail, which is coming out of Shemayim. You have the kinim, you have the insects, which are itchy. And you have the arba, number eight, where the insects are not just a little bit itchy, but they're eating all the food and leaving the Egyptians to starve. Arov and Choshech, this one's a little interesting because it's a little unclear what Arov is. Chazal have two interpretations. The more widespread one is that Arov are wild animals. The other one is that Arov is swarms of flies. Either way, the Pasuk emphasizes that the Arov struck in the houses. So either it's flies, and the flies are literally in the houses, or it's getting into the houses, and the Egyptians are locking the doors. But either way, the emphasis there, the Egyptians are cowering in their houses as the Arov strikes. And number nine, the Choshech is doing the exact same thing. The Egyptians are paralyzed in their houses, especially if Arov is flies. So flies attack the dead. They attack dead meat. Both Arov and Choshech might symbolize the advent of death, which is just a buildup to Makkah 5 and Makkah 10, where the Egyptians' animals are dying in Dever, and the Egyptians themselves are finally dying in Makkas Bechoros. So all that comes from the explanation of the Ma'aseh Nisim. That's why we have, in particular, I think this is a really, really cool suggestion, the Dever and Makkas Bechoros, Dever and Cherev, Yad Chazaka and Zroa Nituya. So we wanted to know why the Pasuk does not mention the Makkos. Actually, we begin with the two highlights, because this view of the Haggadah is looking at them in sets of fire. Okay, so that is what we have to say about Yad Chazaka and Zroa Nituya. There's one idea that I had. I did not see this anywhere. But if we stick to the pshat, so even if we can come up with, and the Haggadah does come up with good reasons, references which are interpreted to mean the psukim, the dever, the cherev, the dam, we're going to see at the very end. But it still is so striking that the makos themselves are not mentioned. I think the reason why is to go back to that core idea that the Haggadah was communicating before. What does the pasuk want us to focus on? Not on what Hashem did, but all the references in the psukim are that it was Hashem that was doing it. We don't talk about blood. We don't talk about frogs. We don't talk about hail. We describe them as Hashem's hand and Hashem's outstretched arm and Hashem's signs and Hashem's mofsim. In other words, every description we have in the psukim in Devarim focuses on the fact that this is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What exactly was it that Hashem did? That's of secondary importance. It's very important. There's a lot to learn, obviously, about the details of Dam and Svardeya and Kinim. But the key thing for us to know, don't let the coolness and amazing miraculous nature and the detail and the things to learn about each of the Makos distract you from the fact that they all came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's going to be described in the Psukim as it was Hashem, 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 Hashem. It was all Hashem. Now you'll darshan and you'll understand what exactly those were. But the way they're written in the Psukim themselves is all trying to draw us back, I think, to that original core point, anihu v'lo acher, that everything is being done by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Okay. So now let's move on to Mora Gadol, right? The third of the five Gashas over here. So Agada says, what is Mora Gadol? What is great awe? Zo Gilui Shechina. This is the revelation of Hashem. Shechina, Kmash Nemar. Who has ever seen Hashem Levo Lekachas Lo Goy Mikarev Goy? Who has ever seen God take one nation out of another? And the Pasuk continues, Kechol Asher Asal Lachem Hashem Lekechem Mitzrayim. Le'enecha, like everything Hashem did in front of your eyes. Rashi explains that the drasha here is on le'enecha. What does it mean that you saw it happen? Obviously, you saw it happen. You were there. Why does the Torah have to say all the great things that Hashem did, le'enecha? Yeah, we were there. We saw the Makos. We saw Kriyas Yamsuf. We saw ourselves be taken out. So Rashi explains the drasha of le'enecha means that it wasn't just that Hashem did these things, but that Hashem actually revealed himself to us in the process. Rashi also quotes the translation of Unkelus. What is Mora Gadol? So we said Mora Gadol means great awe, but Unkelus, who almost always translates everything literally, so here Rashi points out, he actually translates Mora as Mar'eh Gadol, great vision. The Targum says, Chazona Rava, a great vision, right? Chazon is a vision, and it is Le'enecha. So that is, once again, all being drawn back to that source, right? That we didn't just see the Makos, we had Hashem himself revealed to us as well. Now, the Ritva has a great addition over here, because the Pasuk didn't just say There's another redundant word in the pasuk which we're darshaning, which is everything that Hashem did in Egypt. We know that this is in Egypt. Torah said, the pasuk said, has anybody ever seen God take a nation out of another nation, like all the amazing miracles and signs that Hashem did for you in Egypt? We know it's in Egypt. So the Ritva points out, he says, the pasuk wants us to know that Hashem revealed himself to us in Egypt of all places, despite the total impurity and contamination there. Normally, Nevuah only occurs in Eretz Yisrael, the whole land of Israel. That is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself to Nevi'im. Mitzrayim is the total antithesis of Eretz Yisrael. It's so contaminated that Jews are not even supposed to live there for all time. We're not supposed to move back ever. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes back into Mitzrayim. Why? Because he needs to reveal himself to us. That is so essential to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do that. He does so even in Mitzrayim, even in the contaminated land of Egypt. Rav Itzel of Volozhin, the son of Rav Chaim Volozhin, the second Rashi of Volozhin. So he comments on this. He says, you know, the Torah says that Vavarti Beretz Mitzrayim, I'm going to go into Egypt, and I myself, that's what we were darshaning, me, I'm going to kill all the firstborn. And then the Torah said something kind of random. I'm going to, you know, judgment on all the Egyptian gods. The gods of Egypt were never mentioned. When Moshe Rabbeinu in the previous parak, in parak Yud Aleph in Sefer Shemos, comes to Paro and says, let us go, or else your firstborn will all die. He doesn't say anything about all their idols being destroyed. So where is that coming from? So Rav Itzel Volozhiner writes that it was not part of the intent of the plague per se, so much as it was a necessary result, a necessary byproduct. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to openly reveal himself in Mitzrayim, by definition, the Egyptian idols cannot exist in the same land where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence is. Now, this town ain't big enough for the two of us. So if there's going to be Hashem Shechina, there's going to be this Mora Gadol, there's going to be this Gilui Shechina, this idea that Hashem reveals himself in Egypt of all places, it can't be. The Egyptian gods, all that, the whole world of Avodah Zarah and everything it stands for, cannot be there simultaneously. It had to be that it's going to be destroyed. Okay, let's move on to the Osos. So here, this is a bit of a cryptic one. Osos Zehamata, right? The Haggadah says the signs, that is Hashem's, that is Moshe's staff. Okay, pasuk Haggadah has a good pasuk for this. Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu by the burning bush, Esamata Zebek Tikach Biadecha Asher Tasabos Osos, take the staff to do the signs. But what is so important about the staff? I mean, the Abarbanel, he literally calls this a drasha muzara. This is a weird drasha. This is a bizarre drasha. It wasn't me who said it. It's Abarbanel. Said, this is a very strange drasha. What does it even mean? Now, the Malbim helps us understand just mechanically where Chazal are getting this from. If I didn't know any better, and someone said, what are the osos? What are the signs? What are the miraculous signs in Egypt? I would have said it was the plagues. Well, you can't say it's the plagues because the plagues have already been taken, writes the Malbim, because the Malbim understands that that was the Dever, the Cherub that we had before. The plagues have been spoken for. So what is left? What is left is the staff. To be honest, I haven't seen, I'm still kind of looking for something that I feel really excited to share about the staff. Just a couple of things that I have found. So the Abarbanel then asks, you know, let's link this with the next line in Haggadah. The next line in Haggadah is the Mofsim, the other signs, which are the Dam. So Abarbanel is trying to explain, understand, why am I having a staff in blood? When we read the Haggadah Seder night, often it kind of feels like this is the random leftovers. Like, okay, that's what it says here. There's a staff, and there's Dam, there's blood. Okay, you know, I guess that's getting mentioned for some reason. I would have thought Dam would come first if it's the plague of blood, but apparently it comes last. Okay, whatever. So Abarbanel suggests that actually the Osos and the Mosim represent all of the Makos. He says, which plagues did Moshe Rabbeinu use the Mata for? It says Moshe used the Mata for plagues 1, 2, 3, the first three. I guess Aaron is the one who uses the staff, right? Aaron waxed the Nile River for 1 and 2. Then Aaron waxed the ground for number 3. And then Moshe Rabbeinu extends the matah towards Shemayim for the hail and the locusts. So 7 and 8. Okay, so that we have 5 makos left, which are unclean. 5 and 10, Dever and Makos Vachoros, says the Abarbanel, those have already been mentioned. That was covered already by the Dever and the Charan. So we then have 3 makos left. We had 5 and 10 were covered by Dever and Charan. 1, 2, 3, 7, 8 were covered by the Matah. And for those of you who don't have these notes at home, which I do, that leaves us 4, 6, and 9. 4, 6, and 9, he says, are the mofsim. So why are Arbe, Shchin, and Choshech referred to as blood, referred to as dam? So some of these, the Rabbanel has needs of time. He says, well, Arov is dam because the wild animals, that was the first time they made the Egyptians bleed. Great. The Shchin, he says, is the Egyptians themselves bleeding. Those were exacting blood from the Egyptians. Choshech, he has to kind of stretch. But he has a good point. He says the reason why Choshech is referred to also as dam is because if you think of the sun turning red and going dark, what happens to blood if blood is exposed? Blood is bright, and then blood becomes dark red, and then it turns black. He says that's actually exactly what happens to Choshech. Choshech is the blood going black. It's the end of the process of the blood. He says this is why we have the drasha, we quote the pasuk in Yoel. It seems so random. We know the words because we dip our wine. Dam, v'esh, v'simros, ashan. What is that? Blood, fire, and pillars of smoke. So Barbanel says, yeah, that refers to the last 3 makas we're talking about. Dam is the maka of Arba. Is the maka of Aro, the blood of the Egyptians being spilled. The esh, the fire, is the blood, is the inflamed boils of the Egyptians in Shchin. And simros, ashan, the pillars of smoke, that is the darkness of Choshech. So that is how the Abarbanel, actually a very interesting read, how to understand what's happening here in the Pasuk, as he's trying to claim all 10 Makos being explicitly referenced in the Pasuk. The Mayam Lois, though, I thought had another just point, which I hadn't thought of before. And I feel like there's more to chew on for this. So I'm going to throw out what I have from here so far. And I think there could be more for us to consider as we come up to Pesach. The Mayam Lois says, you know, I mean, what is this staff? So he comments and he says, you know, this staff was Moshe's regular staff that he had with him at the burning bush. And then Moshe has the revelation. He sees the revelation at the burning bush, and the staff that he had with him becomes this unbelievable, miraculous instrument of Shafa, right? The Hashem's overflow happens through what had once just been a humble shepherd staff. And the idea of the matah is not just, you know, it's not some like wizard's magic stick. And Chazal say that it was created in the, Ben Ashrashas, the end of Maaseh Bereishis. So totally fine. But Moshe Rabbeinu is walking around with this as his regular shepherd stick. And what was a regular, humble stick from a shepherd becomes an instrument. Hashem can use whatever he wants. The Egyptians and their magicians, they think that you need special talismans and special tricks and special things. You, whatever instruments they had, if Hashem wants, he can take a plain stick that belongs to a plain shepherd, and that can be what is going to be used to create all these unbelievable miracles. Related to the idea that we should think of the matah as just a humble stick, but once it's been exposed to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it can do unbelievable things. So the Abarbanel over here comments, and he says, you know, speaking of the burning bush, let's talk about the burning bush for a second. What did the burning bush symbolize? There are many interesting suggestions in Mepharshim. The burning bush can refer to Bnei Yisrael, who suffer and suffer and yet survive. The burning bush can refer to Paro, who's going to burn and burn, and yet Hashem is going to keep the punishments coming. Barbanel says the burning bush refers to Moshe Rabbeinu. He says that Hashem tells Moshe, go back to Mitzrayim and don't be afraid. You, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're the humblest person on this earth. You are a snag. You're just a humble thorn bush. There's no glorious anything to you. You're the most humble man alive. You are going to go back to Mitzrayim, and you're afraid what's going to happen. They're going to try to burn you. They're going to try to kill you, but I guarantee you they won't be able to. Just like the burning bush could not be destroyed by fire, Hashem is telling Moshe, you humble Moshe will not be able to be destroyed by the Egyptians. He says that's why Hashem tells Moshe, take off your shoes. Why are you taking off your shoes? He says, you're invulnerable. You're invincible. You don't need the protection. You don't need the protection of shoes. You have the protection of me. This description of Abarbanel, it's very similar. If you look at the beginning of the Sefer Yirmiyahu, and this is the Haftorah, the first of the 3 weeks of Torahs. So the first message, or the second message, Hashem has for Yirmiyahu is, go B'nai Yisrael, and your career is going to be to tell them all the things they're doing wrong, and don't worry. And he has another image for Yirmiyahu, that you're going to be like a tower. They're going to try to conquer you, and they can't do it. That is the Abarbanel's message to Moshe Rabbeinu as well. So we said Moshe is not in the Haggadah, but we have the humble ramble, the humble sneh, Moshe Rabbeinu, holding a humble stick, just a simple matah, but that humble bush, that humble stick, can do the most unbelievable things. You don't need the royalty, the paro, all the trappings that all the world of Avodah Zarah is obsessed with. We look, our role model for all time is humble Moshe and his humble stick. To finish off the Mofsim, so I want to cite an idea that the Netziv makes, right? So the Haggadah concludes with Mofsim Zehadam. This is the blood. It's very difficult to understand what exactly is going on over here. The Maharal thinks that we single out the blood because, unlike all of the other plagues, the blood is the only one where something changes internally. In some ways, blood is the greatest miracle because, you know, frogs come out of the river, animals assemble, lice assembles, but the dam is the only one where Hashem takes water and turns it into dam. He says that's what the Haggadah is highlighting, the matah and the dam. The matah symbolizes Hashem's ability to do things, to perform. The matah is used to create all sorts of different miracles, and the dam is reflects Hashem's ability to have change done to things. The water that was turned into blood. So those are the two ideas that the Maharal wants us to think about: what Hashem is able to do, and the things that Hashem is able to have done to them. But the Netziv suggests, and this again goes back to that core idea we had about Hashem himself. The Netziv says, what's the matah and the dam? It says, we're leaving the world of Egypt. The world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and all of that doesn't just have with us when we're in Mitzrayim. It happens with us when we're in the Midbar as well. Moshe's staff makes appearances while we're in the Midbar. Hashem, Moshe has the matah by Amalek. The matah, the staff, comes back in Parshas B'Shalach with Mara. We know Moshe Rabbeinu takes the staff at Mei Meriva when at the end of his life, Parshas Pukas. Moshe used that staff throughout his time in the desert. So the Netziv says the matah symbolizes Hashem's miracles also while we are in the desert. And what's the blood? And here things get a little bit dark, but also very, very serious and very important. The Netziv says the blood that's referred to is our blood. The blood is the punishments that we incur as a result of not following Hashem's mitzvahs. Where is that coming from? There's a general theory the Netziv has. You know, you read like Sefer Bamidbar, and we complain, and then a fire comes down and burns thousands of Jews. We have a bad day with the Meraglim, and we're doomed to 40 years in the Midbar. We ask for slav, and you have Jews who are dying because they're eating the meat. It's a little much. So the Netziv has a very, very important theory. The Netziv says the world, and this really kind of, he traces how this evolves over the course of Sefer Bamidbar in particular, says living a life of Gilui Shechina, living a life with Hashem openly revealed for us, brings with it both unbelievable opportunity, but also unbelievable responsibility. Because the closer we are to Hashem, the higher Hashem's demands of us are going to be. And so that is why the slightest deviations in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar lead to the most terrible consequences. That's why after the Chida Egel, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, I should pull back. You don't want me leading the camp anymore. You want a Malach instead. And Moshe Rabbeinu is thinking ambitiously. He says, no, we still want a Kadosh Baruch Hu himself. But the whole world of Ani Hu Velo Acher, us being in such close connection and communication with Hashem, us being able to experience the Matah, it's not a one-way street. It's not a freebie, says the Netziv. If we're going to have Hashem so open with us, and yet we're not going to observe his mitzvos, the consequence of that is going to be dam. And that is something that Haggadah wants us to absorb. It's not just we sit back and watch, you know, enjoying the show as Hashem puts on a show for us. We probably enjoyed it while Hashem punishes the Egyptians. We need to think, what is the responsibility for us? And Hashem's Gilui Shechina to us, there's a reason why. We're going straight to Har Sinai. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Not for a day do we wait. We go straight to Matan Torah. The opportunity that comes with Gilui Shechina brings with it responsibility as well. And that's what the Haggadah wants us to know, even if it may be a little bit hard for us to get. Okay. The last major idea I wanted to share is, you know, the Haggadah continues. Dabar Acher. So the Haggadah gives us another way of darshaning the whole pasuk. Right? What is going on here? Yad Chazaka Shtayim, Zrona Tuya Shtayim, Mora Gadol Shtayim, Osa Shtayim, Mosim Shtayim. This is another way of darshaning the whole pasuk. Not the sword and the dever and the Gilui Shechina. No, the second way of reading the pasuk is that actually it's focused exclusively on the makos. Hold this for a second. We're going to come back to this 2, 2, 2, and 2 in 2 minutes. Then the Gemara, the Haggadah, sheer habit. The Haggadah gives us Rabbi Yehuda. Why do I need Rabbi Yehuda to tell me? What on earth did he add? We can figure it out. We can do Dam Tzvardei Akinim, Arov, Dever Shchin. We can figure all by ourselves what the first letter of each of the plagues is. So what is Rabbi Yehuda giving us? So the Mefarshim, many Mefarshim explain that we need to think of these makos in units of three. There's a unit of Dam Tzvardei Akinim. There's a unit of Arov Dever Shchin. There's a unit of Bard Arba Choshech HaMakas Bechoros. Assuming the Makas Bechoros is together with the other three. And there are various explanations given as to what this may be. The clearest sign of this in the Psukim, the most classically quoted one, is that Hashem, Moshe warns Paro in 1 and 2, and then he doesn't warn him in 3. Warns him in 4 and 5, doesn't warn him in 6. Warns him in 7, 8, doesn't warn him in 9. The Netziv, though, suggests that we can find a process of what is happening over here. And I think this Netziv can unlock for us, and with this we'll close the shir, 3 different ways of looking at the Makos. One from Rabbi Yehuda, the Tzachad Ashba Achab, one from the 2, 2, 2, and 2, and one from the Ma'is Nisan before the 5 and 5. The Netziv writes, he says, the Makos here trace the 4 languages of redemption. The Arba Lashonos Geula, which are 4 cups of wine, are parallel to. So what's the first of the 4 languages of Geula? The first one is V'hotzeisi Misavlos Mitzrayim. Hashem tells Moshe back in Parashas Va'era, before anything happens, I'm going to take them out, not from Egypt, V'hotzeisi Misavlos Mitzrayim. I will take them out of the tortures of Egypt. Writes the Netziv, as the Makos begin, we are still fully enslaved to Paro. I'm pretty sure that there are Midrashim to talk about this. When does this end? When are we no longer having to show up for work in the straw department? So the Torah says that happens when Marcus Aro, the 4th of the plagues. The 4th of the plagues is when Moshe Rabbeinu says, send us out. The Torah says about Paro, I'm sorry, the lo shalach asam. He didn't send them out. The first 3 plagues, blood, frogs, and lice, the Torah says, lo shama alehem. He just didn't listen to Moshe and Aaron. The 4th one all of a sudden introduced this new language of he didn't send the nation out. What's the difference? So writes the Netziv, during the first 3 plagues, Ditzach, we still were in the world of Sivlos Mitzrayim. After the 4th, once we get to Arov, right, Adash, now we're no longer slaves. But we're still in Egypt. What's the second language of redemption? V'hitzalti me'avodasam. I will save them from their slavery. Writes the Netziv, even when we didn't need to show up for actual work, we still were thought of as slaves. Legally, we were slaves. You know, it's like when often high schoolers at the end of senior year, technically they're still class for few weeks or a few months. They're still students, but the seniors aren't showing up anymore. So the Netziv says that's what's happening with the second set of Makos. We're being told, Lo Shalach Es Ha'am. He didn't send out the nation. We don't have names. Slaves don't have names. He wouldn't send out the nation. But then all of a sudden, beginning with Barad, and then every single plague after that, the Torah says that Paro didn't send out Bnei Yisrael. Didn't send out Bnei Yisrael. What happens? When do we get names? We get names once we leave slavery. There's probably a lot to think about this. The fact that Shemos begins, the book of us becoming slaves begins, these are the names of Bnei Yisrael. You become a slave, you lose your name. So the first step, the first three Makos, was taking us out of Sivlos Mitzrayim. Then finally Paro does that, but he still wouldn't send us out of Egypt. So he wouldn't send the nation out. The third step is Ve'ga'alti. You'll be redeemed, not just no longer slaves, but be redeemed. That happens after Ba'achab, after Makas Bechoros. Then finally, the fourth language of Geula, what Yerushalmi says is the greatest language of Geula, Ve'lakachti li'la'am, you'll be a nation for me. That's going to happen at Har Sinai. So the way that Netziv is explaining the Tzach HaDash Ba'achab is to look at the Makos as the trajectory of Bnei Yisrael's trip to freedom. We leave the tortures after the first three. We leave the status of slavery after the second three. We leave Egypt altogether after the last four. And then finally, we go on our way to Har Sinai. If we go back to the other two ways that the Haggadah gave us to think of organizing the Makos, we can see two other ways of thinking about them. One way to think about the Makos, one theme in the Makos, is our redemption. And that is what we have with the Tzach HaDash Ba'achab. But there are two other themes in the Makos that the Mefarshim present as well. One is demonstrating, one is punishing the Egyptians, and one is showing Hashem's total control, a lesson for all time. Those are the three: Hashem's control, Hashem's vengeance, and the redemption of Bnei Yisrael. The 5 and 5, right, we saw from Ma'aseh Nisan before, the emphasis there was on the punishment of the Egyptians. You're going to have Dam, which is like Dam Jr., and then you're going to have Shechin, which is Dam on steroids. You're going to have the annoying frogs, and then you're going to have the devastating hail. There, it was set up as a progression of intensity, since Paro would not let us out, right? As a consequence of him not letting us out for the first five, he gets the same show all over again, right? This approach is the 10 Makos, the Mitzvah, are punished again and again. You know, that theme is focusing on this part of the Makos, the idea of the punishment of the Egyptians. And then the last theme, the theme of Hashem's total mastery. So this, I've seen Mefarshim point out, is behind the pattern of 2, 2, 2, and 2. Because what are the twos? Dam and Svardeya demonstrate Hashem's mastery of the water. The whole process is going up, right? We have the water which goes down to the very depths, the very bottom. The water goes below the ground. Then 3 and 4, the Arov and the Kinim, demonstrate Hashem's control of the land, right? The earth turns into Kinim. The earth has swarms of Arov. The Dever and the Shechin, making our way upwards, demonstrate Hashem's mastery of the air all around us. That's where the boils come from. That's the air which is killing the animals. Then 7 and 8, Barad and Arbe, demonstrate Hashem's mastery of Shemayim. The sun gets blotted out by the Arba. The Barad falls from Shemayim. And then Choshech and Makas Bechoros demonstrate Hashem's very mastery over the universe as a whole. Literally the sky itself, beyond the sky, the Shemayim, the heaven, goes dark in Choshech. And of course, life and death, as we have in Makas Bechoros. So those three ways of organizing the Makos, the 3-3-4, the 2-2-2-2-2, and the 5-5, which we have here as the three ways that Haggadah has of setting up for us when we analyze the pasuk over here, give us the three elements, I think, that we have in the Makos. But just take one step back as we are close. Hopefully this is all just a taste of so much that is there. We take a story which we know since we're little kids, and we can take and make it so concise. You know, it's something which can be taught at any level, and it can be taught at any length. And if that is true for the most basics of the basics, we can get it down to the shortest of the short, the simplest of the simple. The process is true on the other end as well. We can think more. Every year we can have new insights, new ideas, new things to share. And I thank everybody so much for coming to join me as we went on this journey together. L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim, we should merit once again next year to study Yetzias Mitzrayim all over again. So yishkach everybody, and have a chag kasher v'sameach.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
And chag kosher v'sameach.
You too.
Chag kosher v'sameach, everybody.